Hi and welcome back to Matrix Moments. This is Saloni and in today's episode, we're going to be talking about the investment cycle of fear and greed with Avnish Bajaj, Founder Managing Director, Matrix Partners India. So be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful, as Warren Buffett famously once said. How many of these cycles, Avnish, have you personally gone through and what have your reflections been on this?
Thank you, Saloni. Thank you for inviting me again for this session. I think it's very topical right now, though I'm not sure by the time we air this what the situation will be. But I think we are clearly in the middle of a fear cycle now. See, in my view, it's not about necessarily, obviously, there's a cliche about fear and greed cycles. My first exposure to cycles and to not go with the flow, essentially fear and greed is about not going with the flow, was when I was way back, I'd just gone to the US, 1993 or 94, I just started working and I got a call. And this, when you watch these Wall Street movies, you see all these trading desks where people are calling and hustling people. And I was clearly one of those who was about to get hustled. I get a call and the guy says, you know, and remember, I've just gone to the US maybe a year or two ago, so I didn't have as much exposure to all of this. Mm-hmm. And the guy says, let me tell you the secret. What is your annual? He knew my annual salary. Let's say it was $50,000 or $60,000. Mm. He said, for $5,000, I'll get you $50,000 in the next 3 months. I'm like, wow, that sounds really good. Yeah. And I said, but I mean, I was not that naive. So I said, that sounds too good to be true. It doesn't work. Yada, yada, yada. And he goes, here's the logic. Mm. In the US, in winter, all oil futures go up or oil prices go up because the winter is very strong in the Midwest. And so the heating oil prices go up. And he gave me this whole spiel that sounded very logical. Mm-hmm. And I said, that makes a lot of sense, but everybody should figure it out. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, but this is just normal cycle. Like you have seasons.
Yeah.
When something is in more demand, the price goes up and then the price goes down. So the markets are still early. Oil futures have just started trading in deep volumes on the Chicago Exchange. So you buy futures with $5,000. When the price goes up, I will call you. I will tell you when they are supposed to go down again and you will sell at the top. You'll make 10x. I said, okay. I didn't have $5,000, but I figured out maybe I took a credit card advance or something and I invested $5,000. That year was a mild winter. So the prices didn't go up. They did go up a little bit, but they didn't go up that much. And this whole, I mean, futures and options trading is about very tight and narrow bands and you have to take certain calls, right? That's when I learned for the first time that if it's so obvious, it is obvious to everybody, right? So that was the first exposure, made me a little bit wary. From that point on, just out of personal interest, even though I was a software engineer, I read every investing book that was out there from 93 to maybe 96, 94 to 90, maybe around that period. Whether it was Peter Lynch, Charles Schwab, Benjamin Graham, Warren Buffett, everybody's books. And I understood this whole philosophy of bottoms-up investing, fundamental, like Peter Lynch, for example, literally used to say, look what is happening around you. And if something is doing very well, that's what your edge is, because other people are not out there. They're just reading other stuff. They're not out there, which is the what we call today primary DD. Between 94 and 97, I think I did a very good job on this stuff and investing well, and with hardly any net worth, built a few $100,000 portfolio.
Wow.
Which was through business school. And then the dot-com bubble bust happened and I got wiped out and this is why fear and greed cycles are important. Typically, when a rising tide is lifting all boats, you start becoming more and more confident and you make the biggest mistakes close to the top of the cycle. So I had gone back to never trading options and futures between 95 and 97, 98. And then because I felt I was so good, and everything was going up, I started saying, okay, now I can do options and futures. And it basically got wiped out in that cycle. So that was the second cycle. After that, I've seen a number of sectoral cycles in India. The internet has had multiple false starts. There was a cycle in 2007. There was a cycle in e-commerce in 2011, 12. There was another cycle in 15, 16.
Mm-hmm.
I think we are just entering another bubble on certain sectors within the Indian internet. But at the same time, you have other sectors that are blowing up. I think what people need to understand is, why are there cycles? And cycles are actually normal.
Yeah.
If you have to start any industry, and if you have to innovate, and you have to disrupt, you have to attract capital to it.
Mm.
You have to attract people to it. You have to attract media buzz to it. And that's what happens. Every sunrise sector goes through a boom and bust. And the reason it is that first people see something very fundamental.
Mm-hmm.
Like today in NBFCs, what did people say? Hey, India is underserved. And then more and more resources start coming into it.
Right.
And then those resources start getting carried away. And then the opportunistic people start coming into it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when a bust happens. And then it cleans it all up. But a fundamental shift and innovation would have happened. And you would have gone to a different level.
Mm-hmm.
So even though it is very, very painful to actually live through those cycles of the up and down, in my view, I call it creative destruction. Right? You actually need it for the bust to happen after the boom. But without the boom, if it was simple linear movement from left to right, create the amount of creation and innovation that happens would not happen. So it's normal, but it's nerve-wracking.
So if things eventually all pan out and fall back into place, then why bother at all and not just ride the cycle out?
Yeah, and I think we'll be putting up a chart in the post about
yes.
about this. And I think that the key is to recognize, like I was explaining earlier, the key is to recognize, if you don't recognize where you are in the cycle, that's when all the money is lost,
mm-hmm.
right? And if you recognize where you are in the cycle, often all the money is made because of that. Now, there is a different point of view on whether being able to time markets and stuff like that. I don't believe beyond a point you can time markets.
Mm-hmm.
But where people make a mistake, and where people would have made a mistake over the last year, probably with NBFCs and some of these fintech companies, is to buy very close to the top.
Mm.
Because you may go from 100 to 200,
yeah.
right? And somebody who got in 100 has doubled their money.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who gets in at, call it 160, goes to 200.
Yeah.
30% correction happens, they've lost money, right?
Yeah.
So, and the guy, or the person who got in at 100 is still in the money. So the key is to be thoughtful and understand where you are in the cycle. My view, I know people think it's a correction and it'll bounce back, and I've taken some wagers on it. I'm willing to go out on a limb and be wrong about it. My view is this is the beginning of we haven't hit bear market yet, but it'll be a bear market in India. Could even be globally, I don't know, because globally there's more liquidity than there is in India.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that this phase is going to be deeper than people think. And the market, there's a classic term in the stock market, it's called the dead cat bounce, which is, things bounce back one day and then they go back and they say never catch a falling knife. So in the chart, we show that this is just past the top and where caution and fear are taking over. And whenever a situation comes about because of the financial services sector,
uh-huh.
it generally plays out faster and deeper than people think. Because the financial services sector is a very, very core sector of the economy, and there are a number of things that are connected. And I can give you one example. Just because I am in the market to buy a home, because of this situation with NBFCs, my bank is raising the interest rates on me. It may well bust my budget. It may or may not, but it may bust my budget. I may not buy that house.
Yes.
If I don't buy that house, the developer doesn't get the cash flow. If the developer doesn't get the cash flow, he's not going to buy more cement, or he may not be. So this is very, very tightly connected. Generally plays out longer and deeper than people think. Actually, faster and deeper than people think, not longer.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other thing about, to your question, why bother? There is something to be said for the fact that worldwide in the history of financial markets or any assets, the bull markets last much longer than the bear markets.
Mm.
Right? So people are feeling good for a much longer period of time than they are feeling bad. The problem is, therefore, that they forget the bad times and the severity of it also.
Mm-hmm.
But the way to play it is to recognize that the bull markets are much longer. One should be thoughtful about when to sell. Somebody said it very well to me that money is made by selling, not by buying.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you have to sell, but most importantly, don't buy at the wrong time. That's the core reason of why I bother.
Mm-hmm.
That ultimately it's a business of buying and selling. And I have been telling our team, as you know, internally, in my view, now is the time to invest in financial services with a time frame of 6 to 9 months of letting things settle down. Last 1 year was not the right time to invest in financial services. So that's the key. On a lighter note, I'll tell you a joke. Or it's a reality, I think. I heard from Paul Ferry, who was the founder of Matrix. He said there was this very successful investor in the US. Mm-hmm. And he would come in and he had a massive mahogany desk. He would open a drawer, look inside, and then close it, and then make his decisions for the day. He was very, very successful. Mm-hmm. Once he died, people said, let's go figure out what the secret is. Mm-hmm. And they opened the drawer and it said, buy low, sell high. That was the secret. And I think people forget that through the cycles. And that's the main reason to understand where one is in the cycle.
But how would you say one should exercise control over emotional investing, and what is the right strategy to adopt at a time like this?
So first of all, go read. There is a ton of literature out there, whether it's Warren Buffett, a whole bunch of these. Bull markets are not the time of favor for value investors. Whether it's Charlie Munger, who's Warren Buffett's partner, Warren Buffett. But the value investors, are the fundamental principles that they teach you apply across cycles.
Mm-hmm.
And so my view and my advice is go read a lot, because in bull markets, one would say, why would anybody think about value when there's so much growth and stuff like that? Number one thing in investing, be cynical. What you see is not what you get. And all the sayings are out there. There is no free lunch. Just having that cynical point of view, which to me, at least I try to practice in the fear cycle also.
Right.
And today, like I said, I think it's a good time to invest in financial services. In my view, last 2-3 years, after there was some e-commerce disruption and people thought Flipkart and Amazon will win everything, in my view, last 1.5-2 years has been a great time to start e-commerce businesses. Essentially, best businesses are built, best money is made counter-cyclically.
Mm.
Apple, we had discussed once, was built in a recession. Well, right. The real comeback was post the dot-com bust. Google is a recession company. Facebook is a recession company. Because people do things on first principles basis. Mm. They don't do, one has to separate fundamentals and sentiment.
Mm.
And often people get carried away by sentiment. So like you said, whenever you're feeling that, like I said, it's not easier, but you have to understand that emotions are sentiment. They are not fundamentals. The other thing I think about and I talk about is, and I know it sounds a little bit cute, but I truly believe it, which is separating bubbles from froth. When you prick a bubble, there's nothing left.
Mm.
When you remove froth, there's still substance.
Got it.
So if you ask me, today if e-commerce valuations go high again, that's fraud, that's not a bubble. 2010-11 was a bubble, 2015-16 was a bubble. Now there is real consumers. NBFCs started with fraud, which is high valuations, and went into bubble territory, where there was just no fundamentals being on which they are giving third, fourth loan. Same thing happened with microfinance in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So one has to separate whether there is a fundamental, structural, secular growth in the sector, and that valuations have gotten carried away, which is froth, or there are just no fundamentals and it's all sentiment. That's bubble.
Okay. Thanks, Avnish. Thank you for listening. And you can find the transcribed version of this podcast on matrixpartners.in. You can also follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn for more updates.